A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Need to laugh. Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chalaos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255, or you can text us at 57500. Ton, our next listener is Nate in Kaysville, and he wants to know if it's too early to plant peas.
It's a bit early. I would give it another week or two. You know, with this weather like this, if it held, you would be fine, but, you know, if we have another cold snap and get down in the teens again, then, and those were germinated, they would have to definitely be covered. So you could probably get away with it, but I personally would give it another, it's the six, I would give it another week to 10 days at least.
All right, next person would like to know when they should prune a spruce bush.
Well, it's really hard to say, depending on the situation, but generally when that new growth comes out and it's fully extended but still soft, you can take about 40% of that growth off. But if this is the text I was glancing at on the Bird's Nest spruce, those things, I just have never been impressed with them. And they always, to me, just in about 80% of them look really ratty after several years in the ground, and I'm not sure if they're completely adapted or what the problems are, but I usually don't see them 5 years after planting looking really spiffy.
Right. That was another text. But so okay. Two texts on spruces.
Okay.
Next person wants to know how far back they can prune a choke cherry bush.
Well, as far as they want, I suppose, but you know, and I wasn't trying, yes, you know, I wasn't trying to be sarcastic or anything, but some more information would be useful on that just so to know their goals. Now, if they were to, and I'm assuming this is actually choke cherry tree, if they were to pollard it in essence, where they take it back to nubs and just a few, you know, then it would be something that would thicken it up, but they would almost need to do it every year because it would form really weak branch angles. And before I can really give a recommendation, we need more information.
All right. Next person lost a peach tree to a bad borer last year. They removed it, but now they're worried about another peach tree that's about 20 feet away, and they're wondering when the best time to treat it is to prevent borer and with what.
They need to treat it all summer long. Starting in early June, they would use permethrin or carbaryl, spray the trunk really heavily, and the ground around the trunk monthly. And they would do that between June to mid-September.
All right. And next person would like to know, they want to start some ghost peppers from seed, and they want to know if they need to soak the seeds before starting them.
No, not necessarily. You can, and they'll germinate a little more quickly. But, you know, Mother Nature doesn't have little fairies with pepper seeds out there soaking them for 24 hours before they get buried in the ground. And so it just hydrates them a little more quickly, and they may germinate a few days sooner, but no, you don't need to.
Okay. Next person says at the base of their peach tree trunk, there's a delicate sap-like material that falls apart. They say it's like the consistency of magic sand. Is this a sign of disease, and should they be concerned?
I wonder if it's old sap from peach tree borer. If it's right at the base and it has a gummy appearance, if they dug down a little bit, they might find some entry holes and some areas the tree's been fed on. So anytime I hear about gumming at the base of a tree, it's usually peach tree borer.
Even when it's more sand-like?
Well, and that's what I'm confused about, because it may be that it's just old and breaking down.
Okay, so maybe just dig down a bit and see if you have those holes first.
Yes.
Okay. Next person says, do honeyberry bushes do okay in this area?
They do. Some of the varieties, I think, struggle a bit, but there are a number of them that do fine, and they're becoming more common at local garden centers. Honeyberries are edible. I just mentioned them earlier. Honeysuckle. Mm-hmm. They're in the honeysuckle family, and so they're bush honeysuckle that have an edible berry. They're a superfood. I've never actually tasted them, but I've seen plantings. And a lot of people are planting them for the health benefits. Sometimes people might buy them, but that's some background on them.
Okay. Next person has some raised planters outdoors, of course. And they want to know, if they plant seeds and then cover the planter boxes a few inches above the soil with heavy plastic, will that act like a greenhouse and keep them warm enough to grow for a few weeks to get a head start on the seeds?
So they're just wanting to put plastic right over the tops with mm-hmm. the soil in them. I would refresh the soil, maybe put in a couple of inches of potting soil or raised bed mix probably would be better, just to refresh it. But if they wanted to stretch some, you know, construction grade clear plastic over the tops, it would warm the soil up more quickly. But it would also necessitate them possibly covering whatever they're growing in there too, because, you know, it's out of season even by a few weeks. And so they almost may be better off getting some inexpensive fiberglass or aluminum hoops if they can find some to fit, and putting those in there and creating a small low tunnel so that they can start things like that.
Yeah, that would give them a longer season for sure. Okay, let's go to the phone lines. Ed is standing by. Good morning, Ed. How can we help you this morning?
Yeah, I live in Draper, and about a year ago, a circle was killing off my grass coming from my neighbor's yard, and then I've noticed another circle, and I'm thinking it's necrotic ringworm. I'm hoping it's not, but I think it is. Can you give me any insight?
Well, it's actually a necrotic ring spot, and okay. It is, it very well could be. If you're seeing like hook shapes that will form into circles, that very well could be summer patch or necrotic ring spot. And it's really common in lawns that are overly maintained. I'm not saying you do this, but oftentimes mowed too short, overwatered, fertilized 4 or 5 times a year is classic symptoms or classic conditions for necrotic ring spot. So okay. What questions do you have about it?
I took sections out last year and put a new sod in. It seemed to stay there. And because that's what I heard is the only thing you can really do is replace the sod. Is that accurate?
Well, not really. I mean, you can try some fungicides and they'll usually slow it down. You would use a fungicide when air temperatures around 70 degrees in the spring. You've got about a 10-day window that you can do a decent job against at least slowing it down or maybe controlling it. Otherwise, what you did was on the right path, but if you did it again, I would have you try to find some seed and top dress with either turf type tall fescue or necrotic ring spot resistant grass varieties. You can go to local garden centers like Steve Regan will have an actual mix called necrotic ring spot resistant turf.
And replace the turf with that type of turf?
Yeah, and bring it up from seed because those will be resistant or immune to the disease. But in the meantime, we've got to – go ahead.
You get seed and plant it in that dead area? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and so you could – those dead areas, you can either aerate or completely remove. Completely removing them would be better if they're not too big, and then reseed with these resistant turf grass varieties so that they don't keep appearing. Now, in the meantime, though, we need to figure out why that necrotic ring spot is there. And so, you know, as far as you're watering deeply less often, just a couple times a week will help because that reduces the humidity in the thatch. And have you checked your thatch layer at all?
No.
Okay, so what you're going to want to do is get a shovel and split the lawn open when it's actively growing. And when you go from the soil up to where the grass is green, around a half inch is the healthy. If you have more, then that would be something that could create an environment that's more likely to have necrotic ring spot in it. And then what's your fertilizer program like?
I use the IFA, the three-step or the four-step.
Okay. And that's usually okay. What I would do with your summer applications is cut them in half and maybe put them down twice as often, or just cut them in half. And because you don't want to nitrogen starve your lawn, but a tons of nitrogen, excessive nitrogen through late June into late August can make necrotic ring spot a bit worse, but this lawn does need some nitrogen. So you could do a couple half applications of nitrogen in July and August to see if that would help your lawn recover more quickly.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks. You're welcome.
Thanks for your call this morning, Ed. The number to call with your questions and for the final few minutes of the KSL Greenhouse Show, 801-575-8255. You can also text your question to 57500.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
Thank you for joining us for the final few minutes of the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria and Ton with you, taking your calls and questions. Ton, our next texter is Steve in West Jordan, and he's concerned about his raspberry bushes. He says he's noticed for the last two or three springs that he's got these little flies hanging over the bushes, and he's wondering what those might be. He calls them hovering flies. And well, he's wondering about those.
They actually could be hoverflies, and those are pollinators. They're not necessarily causing any problems. They may just be there for cooler air temperatures, if it's shaded. You know, if he's not seeing any damage to the
raspberries. Yeah, he was wondering. He says he was wondering if they're a pest or not, so he's
not sure. I doubt
it,
because if there hasn't been any raspberry damage, then no, they're not.
Okay, let's go to a call from Phil in Centerville. Good morning, Phil. How can we help you?
Yeah, I'm trying to prepare my strawberry beds. And it seems like the worst enemy to my strawberries is the pill bugs and snails. Is there any, would you say, pre-emergent treatment for snails? And
not that I dare recommend, as far as, you know, just put it down and walk away. There are some snail treatments out there. There's one called, I believe, Sluggo that is, I think, registered organic and it's pet safe that you could try. There's several others. There's another one called Doggo I've seen, but they all have iron sulfate in them. Those you might be able to use around your strawberries. The metaldehyde, I don't think, is registered for use in, which is the other effective slug and snail bait. That one I don't believe is used for use in crops. I would have to look at the label again. Last time I did, it wasn't. So those would be the options. Some other things you could look at doing is making sure that when you water the strawberries, you water them a couple of times a week and let them dry out between. If there's any leaf litter in there, clean it out. And the pill bugs also like debris and leaf litter and things. Now, I know that the strawberries kind of form a ground cover, but those are some things you can look at trying.
Okay. Yeah, because I used you know, the snail bait I used was the Cory's, and it says do not use around crops and stuff. So there are some baits that are you can use around the strawberries.
Yeah, I believe Sluggo and that Doggo and whatever other ones out there, but they'll have pictures of, like, cats and dogs on them and things. And so that's what you would look for.
Okay.
All right, Phil. Thank you for your call. Mm-hmm. We have just about a minute and a half left in the program. Let's try to squeeze in Becky here. Hi, Becky. What is your question?
Yeah, I have an outdoor planter on a second floor back patio, and I planted some squash last summer, and the vegetables would start to grow. They would just get to baby size, and then they would always die. And I did some research, and apparently bees don't fly up that high to cross-pollinate so that they would grow to maturity. Is that right? And if so, how do I bring these vegetables to full maturity to be able to eat them?
So let me make sure I understand first. How high off the ground are the planters?
It's a second-story townhome.
Okay. You know, they may not find them, but I've never really met a bee that's afraid of heights, you know. Okay. So... and then when you have your planters out there, you're saying the plants come up and flower and then die?
Yeah, the flower comes up and there's a baby-sized vegetable that grows and then it always dies.
What kind of vegetables were these?
Summer squash and zucchini.
Summer squash and zucchini. You can hand-pollinate those.
Okay.
With a Q-tip. So you're just going to get a Q-tip and gently rub it around inside the flower. And you're going to need to go from male. Male flowers are smaller.
Tom, I'm going to have to interrupt you. I am so sorry. And thank you all for listening to the KSL Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are. And this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.